Welcome back into week six now of college football. We are continuing to grow. We appreciate y'all very much. I am David Pollack, and then I have my buddy Brent Rollins with me every single week. Writes for Rivals, obviously works for the analytics for Pro Football Focus. Big way of saying he likes numbers, is a nerd in the film room, and loves football, all things football. So we'll get into week six, and I think we start with one game. There's one game with ranked on ranked, and it's A&M, and it's Missouri, and it's at A&M again. So big deal with A&M because, Brent, I'm just telling you, Kyle Field's nasty. It's really cool. They got some of the coolest traditions in all of college football with what they do in their stadium. That place rocks. They get loud as crud. Missouri, by the way, first time leaving home. Like, every game so far has been at home. And so I think this matchup starts with that, because the hardest thing to me to do in college football, I will say it repeatedly, is to go on the road and win. And Missouri in an atmosphere that they're not accustomed to so far. And I think they've looked human the last two games. First two games, they look like world beaters. Last two games, they've definitely come back down to earth. When you've watched Missouri so far, what have you seen? What have you liked? What have you not liked?
The biggest difference watching them this year, I think, is Brady Cook's inability to hit the deep ball. Like, the 20-plus yard throws for him last season, 92.9 passing grade, almost 50% completion. Thus far this year, 56.6 grade, 21% completion. Everything else, like, they're still running the ball. Burden's still getting touches. But they're just not hitting the big-time down-the-field throws, explosive plays that you're used to seeing from them.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out why. Because I don't know why that is yet. Now, listen, have they had to a lot? No, but their running back, Noel, by the way, he's a freak, man. Like, this dude, you know who he reminds me? You're going to love this. He reminds me of Noel Devine back in the day. Like, ooh, he reminds me, like, and again, the name obviously probably, but just he's super tiny. And you lose Schrader a year ago, and you're like, how do you replace the leading rusher in the SEC, which is what he was? And he makes big play after big play after big play, explosive plays. Like, he's the guy they run the stretch out wide, and he cuts it quick and makes somebody miss. And I think, honestly, Britt, I think he hides behind the line really well. Like, he just they don't see him, and all of a sudden he's past them. So Noel's been really good. Carroll's been good. Brady rushing the football has been good. But, yeah, I don't get it, because Luther Burden's back, and he's an animal. And anytime you get him the ball, he immediately turns into a running back. Like, he's got so much, you know, run after the catch ability. And so I don't know what's missing with the offense, but Brady Cook's just seemed a little bit off. And I saw him take shots after shots after shots in the explosive game, and it's just it hasn't been timed right, and it hasn't looked good. And so I'm interested against an A&M team that they don't let you run the football. Like, A&M's defense is really good up front, like, very, very physical. Huh?
Defensive line is very good.
Yeah, and you watch them. They rotate in and out, and they got a bunch of good guys up front. Nick Scorton, who transferred from Purdue, makes plays all over the field. He looks a little bit leaner. You got Shamar Stewart, big boy inside, number four. And by the way, anytime you ever see a single-digit defensive tackle, defensive end, he's a dude usually. That's just the way it works. And he looks sleeker too. He looks a little thinner. But their defense, if you're going to beat A&M, and that offense is going to have success – it's going to have to be through the throw game. You're not going to line up and kick A&M in the face. So I'm interested to see if they can get that going and flip it to the other side, Brent. Like, when
Wegman, he's questionable on the report thing that came out.
Yeah. And here's what I'll say about that. I'm a Connor Wegman fan. You heard me pumping him up before the season. I thought this guy had a chance to rise up boards because of his elite poise. He's got a good arm. He's got that it factor to me when I watched him a year ago. Marcel Reed's come in and changed the way they play offense. Listen, I think they have playmakers. Their offensive line is not elite by any stretch for A&M. Like, they've had a bunch of injuries. They've played a bunch of centers. Like, there's a bunch of guys up front. I think they run the ball pretty well with Le'Veon. Like, he does a good job running the football. But I think when I watch this offense with Marcel Reed, his ability to run the football makes them a little bit more dangerous. So even if Connor Wegman plays, Brent, I'm absolutely playing Marcel Reed. And here's another reason why. When I've watched Missouri, in the two games they've struggled, who do they play against? They played against BC and they played against Vanderbilt. What do they have in common? Quarterbacks that can run the football. Their defense has struggled against running quarterbacks. That's why with Marcel Reed, it's not the passing game. It's not going to unlock and all of a sudden, you know, be elite. But him running the football against something that Missouri struggled with, I think we'll see some of it. And I think A&M would be stupid not to use it.
126 design rush yards for Reed. Some really unique things they did, even in the Arkansas game. And one of the things that shocked me against Arkansas for A&M was how much it was they trusted him just to straight drop back and throw it. And there's a couple of them where he's throwing from opposite hash to the other outside the numbers on the other side, making some good throws. But they ran a Q counter out of empty RPO that was nasty. And that was very impressive. But you're not going to see that with Wegman. So who plays? How much do they play? How well does Reed play? Because he obviously still hasn't been good against pressure. But this is such an interesting game from a long-term playoff perspective, because we're going to look at that towards the end of the show. But like, if you're Missouri outside of Alabama, this is your big game. You've got Auburn, Oklahoma, Arkansas at home, and then at Bama, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, and then next week they go to UMass, which is a random one-off. But
that's a lot of wins on the schedule, and so yes. This is a big one for Missouri, and I think they need it. They've got to have it. They've got to win. If you're going to keep staying in that playoff mix. And another thing too, if this game comes down to you know, blank cutting time, you know, and it's on the line and it's on the wire, dude, you missed 3 field goals. Missouri did in the last game against Vandy, shouldn't have let them hang around. They've been high in penalties in some games where you've seen. So I just, the sloppiness of Missouri, as this season continues to go and grow on, they can't have that. I think they have enough. I think they have enough to win this football game. But if it comes down to the wire and they got to make a kick, just remember, their kicker has struggled, and that's a big deal. So I think that's something that we'll point to. But listen, there's a bunch of sneaky good games this week. I don't think there's a lot of elite games, but there's a lot of really good games that I'm very interested to find. And I think Mr. Nuggets, man, you got some stats on a lot of these games and things, the ways that we can talk about them.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, you think historically with college football, this is one of those weeks where somebody goes down that you weren't expecting, and it's one of these games. All right, first one, we'll go sort of three Big Ten games. Michigan State at Oregon. So we got, by the way, Oregon's defensive interior, Derek Harmon, leads Oregon in quarterback pressures. He played the last 3 years at Michigan State. Dylan Gabriel's thrown 75% of his passes less than 10 yards.
Yeah.
So the big question here is, will you be able to apply the transitive property in this game to the Ohio State-Oregon matchup that's coming up next week?
Yes, I think we'll look at it. Ohio State last week. I don't even know what that means, Brent. I don't know what the transitive property means, but
the scores. Combining the scores and looking at the scores.
Correct. And we'll be doing that regardless. I think we'll be staring at that. But I am – you watch Dylan Gabriel – and you do see the ball coming out hot, coming out quick. The offensive line has been a struggle, but this will be pretty good competition. I'm excited to see Oregon play, but we are definitely forecasting towards the next week. Michigan State had no answer for Ohio State last week, and no matter what happens, we'll definitely be doing the comparison game and looking ahead to the next week, because Oregon-Ohio State is going to be fantastic. Oregon, at home. Huge deal. And this is a big run coming up for Ohio State. Ohio State's got a filthy schedule for 3 weeks in a row when they go at Oregon, at Penn State, and then then they host Nebraska. That's a big stretch that we'll find out about. But here's the thing. When I watch Ohio State, we'll get into Ohio State later, but I watch their offense, Chip Kelly coming through and through with everything I see. But we'll definitely be applying that property.
All right, so by the way, speaking of Ohio State, let's go there next. Okay. Iowa, they play Iowa, host Iowa, for only the fourth time in the last 12 years, by the way. Iowa's already hit 30-plus 3 times this year. It only happened once.
That's usually a season's worth of offense.
They actually did beat Ohio State back in 2017, and they put up a double nickel, I think, against them. Can they get to 20 in this game against the Buckeyes and keep it interesting?
I think they'll keep it interesting for a half. Here's the first thing. When I watch Iowa, dude, I think they have one of the best running backs in the country, period, that nobody talks about. You watch number two, dude, he's a big 225-pound back, and he looks good. He leads the nation in 20-plus yard Johnson. Rushes. He breaks tackles, really good vision, yards after contact. I think he's a main reason why this offense looks really, really good. Cade McNamara looks healthy, settling in. When you saw Iowa, the biggest concern for me with Iowa was – Why are they not able to be good in the red zone, in the short yardage against Iowa State? That was the biggest thing that broke their backs. I mean, they had so many opportunities to punch it in, and they were almost trying to force the passing game and prove the passing game. I think this is close, but, dude, when you watch Iowa State, like, Njigba was a given, and he was a guy that we were talking about, like, that was a baller, legit, going to be drafted really, really high. Everybody's talking about Ryan Williams. Ryan Williams is not the best freshman receiver in the country. Jeremiah Smith is. This dude is Freaky Friday. Like, he is absolutely insane. The combination of height, weight, speed, stupid hands. Like, you saw two one-handed catches last week against Michigan State. Jeremiah Smith is an absolute freak show. Like, listen, I see this offense, and I'm watching it run counter, and I'm watching the QB run game, and I'm watching all the weapons they have. I think they're still going to find themselves throughout the season, continue to grow. Chip Kelly, by the way, he's the offensive coordinator. If you haven't been around college football for a while, like, he's been a great offensive mind for a long time, and you're starting to see his fingerprints all over the offense. And the defense, really good, really, really good. They've been really good at stopping the run, which I think Iowa obviously presents that challenge. But I like Ohio State. I like Ohio State big in the second half to pull away, but I do think for a half, it'll be very competitive.
All right, that last one in the Big Ten. The Fighting Curtis Rourkes, otherwise known as the undefeated Indiana Hoosiers, who, by the way, are third in the nation in scoring.
Yeah.
Only behind Tennessee and Miami. So the question is for them is, do they get to 9-0 hosting Michigan on November the 9th? They got at Northwestern this weekend, Nebraska and Washington at home, and then at Michigan State.
I think the Nebraska one is the one that they might trip up and they might lose. But I tell you what, I had to go back and watch. I watched every Indiana game, and Kirk Cignetti is the new coach. And this QB is good. Rourke is good. Like, he is really good. And
The former Ohio Bobcat.
Yeah, but here's what I really like about him. First of all, he's got slipperiness in the pocket. He's got the ability to run because he gets pressured a good bit. So he can make plays with his feet. He's not like a – he's not electric and dynamic like some of these guys, but he is definitely has the ability to extend. But you watch him time and time again catch the football, Brent, and get rid of it. Like, RPOs, you know, their offense is diverse. They do a little bit of everything, but the ball comes out of his hand really quickly. He uses his eyes so daggum well. When you watch Nine drop back this week, I want you to watch him. He'll drop back and he'll turn real quick, and then he knows exactly what he's doing to manipulate the defense and where he's going with the football. And that's what I think I've seen with them. Dude, they hadn't turned the ball over yet until against Maryland this past week. They turned it over like 3 out of 4 possessions. I think he threw 2 picks, 1 deep ball, which was bad overthrown, and then 1 got undercut where it was that, and then they fumbled. Okay, if Indiana in the past, Brent, if the Indiana Hoosiers have 3 turnovers on 4 possessions, you can go ahead and chalk that up to a loss. Like, that football game is over. So that's what I want you to understand. Like, they're good, dude. They scored 31, 77, 42, 52, and 42 points. Like, this is a good offense. They got Price at wide receiver, who's a transfer from Texas Tech. They got, you know, Ellison at running back. They got Keyshawn Williams, who's catching touchdowns, number 5 out wide. Like, they've got speed. They've got balance. And the biggest thing is, man, they got a quarterback who's athletic, who uses the whole field, uses his eyes, uses all his weapons. I've been blown away. I was blown away when I watched Indiana. That's not what I expected when I saw them. So I think they'll be 8-1. I do not think they're going to go. I do not think they're going to go undefeated.
Okay, so they're not 9-0 hosting Michigan.
No.
All right. So jumping out of the Big Ten into the SEC, first one we're going to look at Auburn at Georgia. First road game for Auburn. By the way, if I asked you which quarterback in this game has a lower passing grade and more turnover-worthy plays, who would you say?
Well,
because the answer is Carson Beck.
I would have obviously gone for Peyton Thorne, but Peyton Thorne also got benched for a couple of games too, so he didn't have as many opportunities. And listen,
so do we get here? So here's the question: this game, do you get a ticked off Georgia dialed in, or do you get a kind of sleepwalking hungover type Georgia?
Well, here's the problem. So you have the hungover Georgia, but you also have now where you go watch tape and you see Auburn and you see their loss record, and this team could be 5-0. Like, you can spin it however you want. They could be 5-0. They easily they could have beat Cal. Cal took care of business. Cal won. They should have beat Oklahoma. Like, outgained them, out first down them, had a chance, but they made some a stupid turnover late in the game. It was really Thorne's only mistake throughout the game. He played really, really hard. So you also have that now. So I think that that's even worse for Georgia. But listen, Georgia's defense really, really struggled against Thorne and company last year. Really struggled. This game's in Sanford Stadium. Like, it should be a different animal. Georgia at home, they should be a little bit ticked off. This should have been a reality check for them. But if you think this is a rollover, pound them game, I don't agree. I think it'll be a really good game at the half, and I think it'll be a good game going into the fourth quarter type, and then I think Georgia, you know, takes care of business. But absolutely mind-blowing that you just said that Bex had more mistakes than Auburn quarterbacks, because it doesn't feel that way.
No, that's why we do what we do with the data. All right, next one, another sort of just how does somebody rebound game. Dart's been sacked. Jackson Dart, Ole Miss at South Carolina, coming off a bye. Jackson Dart's been sacked at least 3 times, by the way, in 7 of his last 16 FBS games. He had 4 against Kentucky, and we know they're going against the pass rush that is pretty good against South Carolina. So does Ole Miss rebound, or does South Carolina actually get that sort of early signature win? Because, by the way, their schedule does not get any easier. It is loaded with ranked teams. I think 6 of their next 8 opponents are currently ranked.
Yeah, and it's not because Kentucky beat South Carolina, or it's not because South Carolina beat Kentucky, but I just didn't think last week was the upset for Ole Miss because they were at home. And when you go to South Carolina, ask LSU, ask anybody who's ever played in that stadium, I have, and it didn't matter. It was always close. Like, their fans are crazy, psychotic. And when you have a pass rush like they have, it becomes an issue. Ole Miss, where was the running game last week? They really struggled to run the football, and they got some injuries at running back spot. But if Ole Miss, if
speaking of injuries, by the way, their list very lengthy in terms of questionable and out and all that. They're banged up. This is a lot of games in a row for them. Physical game with Kentucky.
That's funny. You say a lot of games in a row. They played nobody to start the season. A bunch of bye weeks, basically. But I guess guys get banged up. But here's the thing. Here's another part. If you're watching Ole Miss's offense that you're disturbed with, is those deep shots got to hit, man. Like, this is an offense that lives off of explosive plays. And I think Jackson Dart went 1 for 7 last week in 20-plus yard throws. And those are the ones, man, that – they soften you up, they body blow you, and then you got to take advantage of those shots. South Carolina can be run on. South Carolina, that's the one thing about South Carolina. Their defense is not as stingy against the run game. You let them, if you don't run the football and if you miss shots down the field, they will hunt you. They will eat you at quarterback. They will eat your quarterback up. And Ole Miss has struggled to protect their quarterback, like you said. So the problem for me in this game, there's two issues. South Carolina's offensive line is a struggle bus. It is not great. And if you look at Ole Miss, they got some big dogs in the trenches now. And not only is Ole Miss really good against the run, they're good pass rushers too. This D-line is versatile. Listen, they paid a lot of money for their defensive line, okay? They ain't the only one. I'm not knocking Ole Miss. I'm saying they wanted to address the line of scrimmage. That was an issue in the past. They weren't going to let it happen. Their defense did not get roasted last week against Kentucky. Their offense stunk it up. They stunk the joint up. So I look forward to watching this defense. Lenore Sellers coming back for USC is a huge deal. Like, a huge deal if they want any kind of chance, because he's the mobile quarterback that you can do all the gadgets with. You can do all the trick plays with. You use his feet, his big, strong body. That's a big, strong sucker. And I expect South Carolina to bang around in this game. I expect it to be competitive. But the line of scrimmage battle, to me, is Ole Miss's. Ole Miss lost. I'm interested to see how they bounce back, but I like Ole Miss in this ball game.
All right, next one, the SEC, Tennessee at Arkansas, another road game. And Nico, by the way, with a 29.6 passing grade under pressure, which right now is the 4th worst in the Power 4. So can Arkansas actually get some level of pressure and make this interesting, keep it close?
I would love to say yes, and I want to say yes, but did you watch – A&M. Now listen, Arkansas is another one, by the way. Pig Suey could be 5-0. Like, they should have beaten Oklahoma State.
The last 3 years for them.
Yes, that's true. But they should have beat Oklahoma State. They gave that away, a 21-point lead, and then they easily could have beat A&M last week as well. So Arkansas's, again, they're better than their record. I've been impressed with them. I've been impressed with Bobby Petrino. Like, listen, we got to call a spade a spade. Taylen Green comes from, I think he came from Boise, right? Like, he come over and he is a dual threat and he can put pressure on you. Number 10 will make magic happen and he'll also throw it to the other team and he'll make magic for the other team. But listen, if Tennessee's defense is what we've been saying it is, and if their front is what they're saying it is, what we've been saying there is, they should maul them because A&M mauled them up front. They absolutely own the line of scrimmage. And so this is one of those games where I'm like, okay, Tennessee, I want you to keep showing me who you are. I think Tennessee can continue to run the football. I love Josh Heupel's kind of evolved, and he was willing to hand the football off over and over again against Oklahoma. I think the run game can carry the day for Tennessee, but more importantly, the defensive line is dirty. And I look for them to dominate this football game. Going on the road in a tough environment against a team that's not very well respected, sometimes you check your maturity of your team and you figure that out. But I think Tennessee's a team that can – they're so balanced and they can beat you a multitude of ways. Michigan, we've seen them. They can't beat you with offense. They can't outscore you. They have to play one brand. Tennessee can get hot on offense. They got a really good defense. So I think that carries the day, and I think they take care of Arkansas.
All right, last SEC game, semi-SEC game. We got Central Florida at Florida. So the question is, do the Gators stumble again against another Florida team?
Surely not, right? Like first of all, if you step up and answer this question confidently, I don't know who you are, and I don't know what you've been watching, because it's hard to answer confidently. But I like DJ Lagway. I like what they've done with Lagway and Mertz, like kind of
a little bit of both.
Yeah, using both together. If I watched UCF last week, I lost confidence in them, and they're one dimensional. If you don't know it, they can't KJ Jefferson at quarterback, who came from Arkansas and, you know, wasn't an elite thrower there either. But now Gus Malzahn, it's the running game, and it's one dimensional, and that's what you're going to get. I think Florida's good enough to take away that dimension. And Florida's good enough. By the way, Florida's offense is good. It's been really good this season so far. And they can score with Lagway being the changeup, you know, quarterback that can fly. He's a freshman and he's the future, you can tell. But Graham Mertz also keeps the whole playbook open and the ability to stay balanced. So Florida wins. Florida does not go winless against Florida.
They got Florida State later at the end of the season. So that you don't want to go 0-3 against your state mates, I guess you could say. All right, we go to an ACC After Dark game. The nightcap, Miami at Cal, which, by the way, Cal leads the nation in interceptions.
Yep.
Can Fernando Mendoza, Jade Knott, the offense for Cal do enough and then maybe turn Ward over a little bit and pull an upset?
See, you phrased this really wrong, because you mentioned their offense when it ain't going to be Cal's offense that keeps him in this football game. I think when you said turn it over and – their secondary has been really good. Now, listen, they haven't played elite passing attacks. You know, like you saw that when Auburn played them. It wasn't elite by any stretch. Here's the thing about Cam Ward, we should do this as a tape segment, you know, at some point in the future. Cam Ward's dynamic. Cam Ward's electric. Coming into the season, what I saw with Cam Ward, without the great supporting cast, by the way, and you have to throw that in there, it was too much big play and too much bad play. Too much touchdown run, buy time, scramble around, throw a touchdown, too much buy time, scramble around, get hit, fumble the football, and turn it over. And so I still see the same thing, Brent. Like, I see he's a guy that I watch the tape, Brent, and I go, he's leaving plays that are on the field. Like, there are plays that we have to continue to make. And Cam Ward's got to be that point guard and be willing to get the football out of his hands. Jalen Milroe, I thought in the first half the other night, was fantastic at it. Like, see it, deliver it, strike it. Like, I want you to do your magic plays, Cam, but I also want you to take care of the football. And that's been his bugaboo his whole career. That's why Virginia Tech was in that football game the other night and arguably could have won it. With the Hail Mary was crazy. But the biggest reason that Miami will win this football game is – Cal's offensive line is ungood. They really struggle to keep their boy upright. And almost 20% of the time, Brent, when he drops back, he's getting hit or he's getting sacked. Miami brings the flipping heat. Like, they've got so many guys they can rotate in and out that know how to rush the passer and make life really, really hard on you. I don't think Cal can score. I think Cal's going to get shut down on that side of the football. You better be able to throw the football to beat Miami or have a quarterback that can buy time and run for his life and make plays. So I don't see that from Cal. So I think Miami takes care of business.
All right. Last game, also sort of semi-ACC, but also undefeated, G5. So we got Syracuse at UNLV, who Haj Malik Williams, a Campbell transfer previously in the FCS, sort of kept UNLV rolling, which, you know, this is a very interesting game for UNLV if they want to potentially be in that playoff run, because they've got Utah State, Oregon State, and then a potentially humongous game with Boise State.
Yep, the big showdown with Boise.
So the question, I guess, is what's different, one, a little bit with UNLV, but also what's different with Syracuse with Fran Brown?
I think if you've ever spent time around Fran, he's got this infectious personality. He's like really overly, overtly positive, overtly smiling. Like, he's a really good, energetic dude who's from up north, who's got some pride about exactly who he is. And I think Kyle McCord in this game will be huge. Like, Kyle McCord's been the whole, when you got a QB, you got a chance. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, across all of college football, everybody's always looking for that guy. And sometimes you find it in the transfer portal. And sometimes you find it in a guy that didn't look that great for where they were, but they come into your system, man, and they start firing on all cylinders. And listen, I like watching Syracuse. I like watching them compete. Gadsden, their tight end, is a grown man, by the way. Like, that dude is a baller. And so you watch him. So I think this is a high-scoring game, fun game. I don't know what the over-under is, but I promise you there'll be a lot of points in Vegas. There'll be a lot of scoring. I'm sure you have the over-under handy, like, right on cue. Because
Friday night game, it is 58.5.
Yeah, I still think it goes over and it's fun. But what's cool is we caught up with Fran Brown, who spent some time at the University of Georgia, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the matchup and, more importantly, how he got to Syracuse, who's been the guys that have really influenced him and made a, you know, big dent in his life that's led him to where he's at. All right, week six of college football. We got a new guy I'd love for you guys to meet, somebody that I've known for a while. And I was doing some reconnaissance last night on you, or the last couple of days, Fran, and texted Kirby and tried to find some information, tried to get a story. And the best I got was a recruiting week that turned into a Philly celebration and a picture that came with it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Philly celebration and a picture that came with it.
You had the Phillies gear on. You were ready to rock and roll. You went up to Philadelphia and watched the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, we played. Yeah, I remember that. I remember
you said,
that.
You said we that. Played too, by the way.
Yeah, we. I mean, you know, I'm definitely 100% Eagles fan. And then I was really excited because I'm at Georgia, and as I'm there, they just keep taking all the Georgia players at Philly. You know, me being from right there was hype. All the time. Kirby and him used to mess with me and always talk trash to me. But then he started going for the Eagles because so many of his players were there. So he had no choice but to start going for him.
Things change quick, huh? Where did you grow up, Fran?
Camden, New Jersey. Camden, right. New Jersey. So, David, so listen, 2008, 2008, 2009. So I get a chance to be with the Bengals on a practice squad, right? Come in there. You probably don't remember this. He's there. Just talking, and I was like coming through and working out. He was like, hey, just keep working hard, keep your head up, everything will work itself out. And I was just like, all right, cool. And you probably don't even remember that, but like saying and going through it, just being up there and just telling me that was just something I always remember. So then remember when we were hooping at the thing that day, and I reminded you, and you was like, oh snap, I do remember that. You know, just getting the opportunity of doing that was different.
Yeah, those.
That was actually the first time I got a chance to beat you. You know, you just seeing. It's like, dang. So it's good. I didn't realize you was gonna be that tall as a linebacker. You know, me playing Division I AA, most of the linebackers in there, by you seeing, was all 5'10", 5'11", and then saying he was like, oh, damn, no wonder. He was huge.
Yeah, I remember when I got to Georgia too. I was like, man, I'm pretty big in high school. I was 6'3", I was 275. I got that. I'm like, where did you come from? Like,
no, just the way you play football, though, is I wish that half our team could play that way, and we'll be a really good football team. Just the way you played and your attention to detail and everything that it is you do, even from watching you on television to just seeing you. And then the best piece of me everyone didn't get to see was seeing you what your son, because our sons are about the same age, and get you opportunity of watching them and being able to see them and see how serious it is. I mean, I know you do a good job in this world professionally, but you know, a lot of people, I want to make sure that I give you flowers while being able to talk to you. I seen you be an even better father, and that means a lot to me because I'm a father, you know, and I got sons and all. Just watching you with your son and seeing how he takes stuff. You're doing a good job at that, bro. Like, keep that up, because, you know, that's who's going to be there for us at the end.
No doubt. Well, thank you. Thank you, Coach. I appreciate that. Now, we all saw you versus you guys versus Georgia Tech, and we saw the thing I loved about it most was the post game, and I just loved your intensity. You were not disrespectful in the slightest, but intense, and you could tell football matters and your competitiveness. And talk about, like, who you are and how you cultivated that. I think you talked a little bit about that as a player, but, like, what motivates you? What drives Fran Brown?
Well, just always beating the odds, honestly. My mom had me at 13, dude. So, like, my mother had me 13 years old. She stopped school seventh grade. My father, I know who he is, but was never, like, around in there. So it was, like, football coaches and uncles, different people that just motivated you to keep going. And, like, you want more in life, you know what I mean? And, like, it becomes a purpose and, like, what you're doing. And then I got a wife, I got children. And just for my sons to see that, you know, like, I'm never going to allow my circumstances to dictate my outcome. And just, like, work, 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 work. And, you know, I like being counted out. I'm going to have a chip on my shoulder the rest of my life. I will be a blue-collar guy for the rest of my life. That's just kind of who I am. So when you come at, like, certain things, you know, like about toughness or about being able to work hard, being able to overcome things, I think that I'm a great example of that for a bunch of young dudes all over, which I'm from the inner city, Camden, New Jersey. I could have easily went the other way and done other things. But, you know, I did it it was actually more difficult, and it was harder to try and stay focused than more so going into the street, because it had been real easy to go the street way. You know, everyone was able to do that, and just being able to stay focused and work. And football saved me. Like, football helped me. Football's got me closer to God. Football's got me to be able to follow, like, great men in this world that I see doing good things. Football has moved me all over. I lived in Texas. I lived in Cincinnati, Lexington, Kentucky. I lived in Georgia. Like, I lived everywhere that you could possibly go, all because of the game of football. So I'm just going to give football everything that I have to be able to share with these other young dudes, to let them know, like, you play this game, you do it the right way, and it helps. It works. You know what I mean? It's an outlet to success, you know, and not just the financial piece. That's what everybody, like, gets into it and thinks about. But it's also to resources and the people you know, and how to be a father, how to be a husband. You know, I learned a lot from coaches, watching Kirby Smart, Matt Rhule, Greg Schiano, just seeing all those dudes, you know, who they were as husbands also was another thing that stood out to me as, okay, I'm a young dude coming up in coaching. Okay, I want to do this that way. And, you know, you see things they do that you like, and you just try to take everything in.
Do you have any good Kirby stories or Matt Rhule stories? And listen, they got to be PG. They got to be PG.
Kirby stories. Every day was hilarious. Like, when Coach Smart is done coaching football, he should do stand-up. This dude is hilarious at practice. I mean, it was just always, and then it's the way he, like, whines when he's talking about stuff to you. He would always be like, "Fran, what are they doing? You guys are soft. I thought you were from Camden, New Jersey." I mean, he would just always be whining about it, saying stuff, but he was always right. But you would just hear your name on the mic, and you're like, dang. I will always go tell Neil and them, "Yo, I'll give you $1,000 if you cut that mic off today, bro." I'll give you $1,000.
So you don't use the mic?
Oh, yes, I do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so I got two kids here three kids that ended up coming over that Coach Smart said it would be good if I took them over here to Syracuse with me. And all they called me, they'd be like, "Yo, you like a young Kirby, Coach. You just running around with the mic, you know, different stuff that we do." We're just trying to really mimic that program and do the same things, because being there and being a national championship and doing all those things, I mean, it was just truly a blessing. Two and a half of the best years of my life of college, of football, was really spent there in Georgia. Just not just winning, but just the community, the culture, just what, I mean, you know, you played in it, so you know what it's like. And it's forever be Go Dawgs in my mindset.
What did you learn in the chair that you only could have learned in the chair? Because everybody prepares for the moment. But what did you learn when you had to be the guy and now you're holding the microphone? I guess you're the guy with the microphone. What have you learned so far?
I learned, honestly, that the culture matters. All that other stuff that you're trying to get through, the culture matters. Like, DART is everything. All these kids, detailed, accountable, relentless, and tough. And you have to continue to push that over and over and over. Like, there's no, it's not an option when it comes to your culture. And then I also learned that you have to coach the coaches harder than you have to coach the players, because that's who they'll be on. And I understand why Kirby was on me so hard, because he knew those players liked me and he knew they would play for me. And so if he's getting on me, then it's going to make them want to play for me. But every issue, I'm talking about all 130-something players, coaches, every issue comes to your desk. And you have to be prepared for that. And they don't get too big because I pray for it. And I always look at you, I pray for this moment. So I'm thankful for the moment. I know that God is not going to put me in a moment that I can't handle because I pray for it. So I'm just thankful for the opportunity I have to do it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. We all have different experiences with different type of football. What was your first experience with Syracuse football?
My first experience here.
No, what about when you were a kid? Didn't you go see?
Oh yeah, I went to see Donovan Darius and Donovan McNabb and all those dudes play. My first experience with Syracuse football was at the Meadowlands when they played Wisconsin, when Ron Dane was playing, and they actually beat the brakes off of Wisconsin. And that was my first experience of it. I remember getting wristbands from the guys. So we wore, my high school colors were purple and gold, and they would give wristbands, gloves, and all. I played quarterback. I got these big, giant orange wristbands on. You remember the ones that was like half of your arm?
Yeah.
I wore a huge orange wristband the next game just because I got it from a player that was on the team. And it was funny, some of the stuff that you do. But that was my first experience when it came to Syracuse football, was that.
Yeah. All right. Now spinning to your team coach and this year, like, you know, Kyle McCord, I remember watching him at Ohio State and I was like, I know he's talented. I know he's highly recruited, but, you know, didn't have the freshman year that he probably, or the first start year he dreamed of. I watch him at Syracuse and I turn on the tape, coach, and I watch this dude. And I'm like, my gosh, I mean, making every throw. Like, I've seen him scramble when he needed to scramble. Didn't see much of that last year either. I mean, and I think it was quote of the year material already when you started, when you said, I might send a bottle of champagne to Ryan Day for letting that guy get out of Columbus. What has he meant to the program and setting the culture and just being that guy for you? Because you got to have guys buy in and believe.
He's a culture setter, like, and it's good to be able to do it with the quarterback. You know how it goes. Like, if your quarterback's following everything you say, because the player's going to listen to you so much. After a while, they'll tone you out. But the seniors and the leader and the leadership group, they just push the message. And he's one that just pushes the message. He works extremely hard. He does everything well. And everyone took it, too, when I said that, like, as if it was a shot at Ryan Day. It was like, no, that's not a shot. I was saying, like, okay, Ohio State's that good. Thank you. Like, that we get to do this, because he didn't stay there. He ended up coming here. They're still doing a great job. But it was just the fact that thanks for doing it. I mean, he was not the first guy to leave Ohio State that was ends up going somewhere being a good player. I just wanted to make sure it's known that Ryan Day does a good job developing quarterbacks, and he got us a guy thank you. You know, to get somebody, you know how it is in college football. If you got a cue, you got a chance. You don't got a quarterback, it makes it hard. So I'm just thankful for this kid. He works hard. He's in here every night like the coaches. He's in here literally till the earliest he leaves is 9:30. So he's in here 9:30, 10 o'clock every night watching film, breaking down practice, calling guys up when they didn't do well on certain stuff. He's looking at the twos and he was upset, like, hey, I don't like the way they practice.
Wow.
And it's funny because when we lost to Stanford, which was like, man, he was getting on certain guys about certain things, and he said the twos didn't practice hard. This isn't right, like something is not going on, and we lost the game.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, I mean, it's like almost having an extra coach.
Yeah, and then people don't get that. I love that comment because it's true. Like, the coaches can lead all they want, but you can only lead so much. You ain't in the locker room all the time. You got to find somebody to step up. Who are those other guys at Syracuse, man, that are dudes, that are guys that have done everything you asked, that are stepping up? Like, I watch Gatson at tight end, and I'm like, that guy is a grown man. I mean, There's other guys too, but who are those guys for you?
I would say Gadsden at tight end. I would say Jackson Meech, a bulldog that came over here with us. Trevor Pena, LaQuint Allen, without a doubt, our running back is like the heart of the football team. And then on the defensive side, Fidel Diggs, freaking Marlo Wax, who's down right now, but Justin Barron, Cinco, Deuce. I mean, it's a lot of guys. Deion the Tank, you know, Tank's a guy that helps us with everything. There's so many of those guys that have just bought in, which is like, thank you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm blessed to have a lot of guys that are buying in and want to do it the right way. And then you still got a lot that's because human nature, guys want to relax. Guys didn't do this last year, didn't do different things. So we still got to coach up everyone. But you got a lot of guys that are bought in that it helps us a lot.
Yeah, it's hard. I remember when I was with Coach Rick when he was there, and you had the old regime, and you got so many people that, like, I'm asking you to do things that you're not comfortable doing that you haven't necessarily done, but this is what it looks like. And then you have that moment like Georgia Tech. We had this moment in Tennessee where it was like, okay, everybody bought in and was like, I get it. Like, this guy knows what he's doing. So having those moments, I think, are huge, those guys buying in. This week is a big week, man. I watch UNLV. They got a shot, man. They got a real shot to be in the college football playoff. They lose. They already handled some adversity well, too, with their QB who's leading them in rushing and passing. He's gone 1 week. They come back the next week. They still look like a really good football team. What about UNLV this week?
I think they're a good team, Coach. Odom's done a good job there in his second year. Last year they won 9 games, which was first time they've done that in a long time. And they got a good defense. They got a good offensive staff. Their offensive coordinator's doing a good job with just tricking people, you know, and then being able to do stuff. And then we got to be able to stop the run. You know, they're going to run the football. So that's the main thing. And then on defense, I mean, special teams, they've done a good job. They've already blocked 2 punts. They've took 1 kickoff return to the house. So, I mean, what better play is it for us to go down to Vegas and get to be the main event Friday night, you know, get to play against them. You know, I was feeling like Mayweather on our way down there. You know
yeah, I mean? Baby.
Excited about it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good show.
All right. Well, Coach, we look forward to watching you. Are you looking forward to now, because you've spent so much time in Georgia and Kentucky and other places, are you looking forward to seeing that weather again up north? Because it's coming. You excited about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, the good thing is everywhere around here, we got indoor. So I'm only in the snow when I get out the car and go right into the indoor. So it's not as bad as it looks good at first, and it's real nice. It's funny because everyone from Georgia, from Florida, they all want to come see the snow. You know, want to be in the snow, man. So it's a good deal, but it's not bad. You know, we got the dome, so we play in the dome. Every game, it's 70 degrees. So, you know, we always in good football weather every game.
By the way, I can second that. When I got drafted by the Bengals and I went up there, it was snow before Thanksgiving. I was like, man, this is gorgeous. I just didn't realize it wasn't leaving till April.
It wasn't going to stop.
No, it was not pretty in the end, and I didn't like it.
And it goes, and it's like everything keeps rolling. So, like, here it might snow, and you know that if it's let a little bit of snow hit Georgia, it is a cancellation of everything, class, school, the whole everything shut down. You get snow here, it's 12 inches of snow. And yeah, 35-minute delay. You know what I'm saying? The hour delay. Everything keeps rolling. There's no stopping anything yet. So, but it's funny.
All right, Coach. Well, it looks like you got a pickup game. You're about to go jump in here in the gym. So you need to go get them shoes
up. So listen, I'm in here with the Auxiliary Sports. They're always in here playing and doing stuff. So I've been trying to learn how to throw the lacrosse ball. It's extremely hard. So learning that and just seeing being around those guys. By us, we have a real good lacrosse team. Our men's lacrosse team is like legit. Coach Gates done a great job. One of the greatest lacrosse players to ever get a chance to play. So I went in here just trying to learn that a little bit. That's kind of my leave time. Or best thing to do, going to the Mello Center, which is right next door, and just shoot some shots where Mello was shooting at. You know, it started to feel good. I'm probably about 3-pointers right now. I could hit 3 out of 10 maybe. You know what I'm saying? My threes has been off lately. But I'm really good inside the paint, going to the hole later. So we're getting some hoops going on here. We're trying to get them going.
Nice. So not only did we get a breakdown of Syracuse football, we got a breakdown of Fran's basketball game and his elite, not elite shooting, but I can get to the cup and body people up.
You remember we played at Wilson-Ann. I'll get to the cup. Man.
Oh, yeah.
You hit a few shots on me that day. I remember we played. I always remember y'all beat the first game and we won the second game. And then we was like, we got to go back to work because I had just started and I wasn't about to have Kirby have me walk back into a meeting late. So I remember that, but that was fun. Hey, tell B-Mac he can't ball either.
No.
No, B-Mac can't ball.
McLennan is not a hooper, that's for sure. Hey, man, I appreciate your time and best of luck, man.
All right, be safe. Thank you.
Yep, have a good one. All right, well, it's good to catch up with Fran. I think he's building something. I think he'll continue to recruit the type of kids to be successful at Syracuse and bring some excitement back. I like that. It was a cool story about him. You know, his first football game, his first experience with college football was watching Donovan McNabb. Like, he goes to watch that game, Brent, and kind of builds on it. But we're going to do this periodically throughout the season. Now we're going to do the playoffs. We're going to do 12 teams. Now, to set the table for this, first of all, Brent's got a cool graphic that he's going to show you, and we'll fill them in as we go. But I think the cool thing, the thing to remember, Brent, is, okay, so rankings matter unless there's another person in your conference that also, that doesn't win the championship. And if they're ranked ahead of you, it really doesn't matter. So the top four seeds will be the highest rated champion in the conference. So if the SEC has the highest rated team like they do right now, Alabama would be the number one seed. Okay. So you would put Alabama at one because they won their conference championship and they're the highest ranked, obviously the highest ranked team in their conference. So if Texas.
Is that who you're putting at number one?
What's that? Do what?
I said, so who are you putting at number one?
Texas.
All right. So you think they win the SEC?
I think Texas.
Unblemished?
Do what?
Unblemished, no losses.
Their schedule, by the way, very favorable. Everybody's schedule at the top of the SEC is pretty good, except for Georgia's. Georgia's really sucks. There's the one that got hosed the most. Yeah, I think Texas takes care of business. I don't know if they're unblemished. I don't care. They're going to be the number one seed, Brent. So they're going to be at the top. They got two quarterbacks now.
Who we got number two?
Are you going to contribute to this too, brother? I feel free. I feel like you should jump in this.
I think it's Ohio State.
Okay. Ohio State, number two. Because, again, Ohio State is a conference champion. If you got them in the Big 12, Big 10, winning the conference championship, you're automatically ranked as the next highest team. So, again, we're going to go to number three, which will be the same thing. Number three is going to be who you got at number three. I'm going to go Miami.
I would have said Clemson, actually.
Really? Okay. Buying Clemson?
I think they might run the table. I think.
All right. Well, we might find Clemson that
we'll go. Hey, we're going to you. Your name's on the show, so we're going with your stuff.
Well, this is ours together. Okay. So the Big 12 to me, by the way, I have no flipping clue. Like, I have not a clue in the world about the Big 12. Like, I'm going BYU. I'm going BYU. You know what I wrote?
This is what I wrote when I did it. I wrote Big 12.
That's what I would do to be safe. But how about BYU, man? Like, they've got Oklahoma State left that I think they could possibly lose to. But this is a team that's always full of grown men, and they're scoring points. They obviously already took care of business and hammered Kansas State. Like, hammered Kansas State. I think it was 38-9. So yep. I'm going to put them. They're the 17th ranked team, and nobody put BYU in the playoffs. By the way, this is what's awesome about this, too, is – we get to talk about, like, there's 25 teams you could put in this mix. And that's what, to me, makes the 12-team playoff really cool, is there's so many teams that are going to be in this equation and in the mix week in and week out, which I think is so dope, man. I mean, I just think it's cool. All right.
Who's your five?
Who you got at five?
I actually had I had Oregon. Yes, I had Oregon.
I'm going Oregon number five. And Oregon will be rematching and hosting Boise State.
I have that same thing as well.
Which was an absolute.
For me, I think also with that five seed, I do think the committee puts the five seed as a, if the one is SEC, then five is Big Ten. If one is Big Ten, then five is SEC. I think they won't have that as a same conference potential in the semis type thing.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that. I think you should put the best teams, but they do look at that. Just like the teams they're going to put in the conference or in the playoffs, they're not going to go seven teams from one conference. I think when it gets down to it, I think they'll want some variety. Oregon and Boise have already played in Eugene, by the way. Yeah. Unbelievable matchup. If you haven't seen Ginty, he's the best running back in college football. Number two for Boise, His highlight tape, dude, Brent, I could do a whole highlight on his highlight tapes. He makes the biggest, craziest broken tackle runs. He never thinks he's down. He never thinks anybody can tackle him. It's absolutely flipping amazing. I mean, it is cool to watch that dude. He's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. And so remember, so now these are home games, okay? So now the next round of the playoffs, everybody gets – so the first four get byes. So if you want a conference championship, you're in there, you get an automatic bye. It doesn't matter what you were ranked, you get an automatic bye for winning your championship. The next four seeds get to host those games against the lower seed opponents. So we got 5 versus 12, so now we need 6 versus 11. I want to know who you got, because I'm very interested in this, because are you going to go to your USC well and pick USC?
I think it's an SEC team. I think it's Bama.
You got
Bama?
At
this point, with the win over Georgia.
Okay.
Yep.
So you got Alabama.
Was that your six? Who was your six?
Yeah. And then, well, I might have wrote down Tennessee.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know how they'll rank these, but I do think – I think Tennessee's in this mix, dude. And if Tennessee loses to both Georgia and Alabama, and those are great games, and they're competitive, like, I don't give a crap if they lost two games. I don't care if you lost three games. I just don't – I don't care. I don't care about that. If you were competitive in all those games and you lost some games against elite competition, that doesn't bother me. So,
all right. So if you go Tennessee 6, who's 7 for you then?
Well, are you going to 7 or are you going against 11 who's playing them?
Okay. 11. What you got? Who against? Who's 11 for?
I want to know if you do. You have the Trojans in here?
I did.
Where did you have the Trojans at?
I had them at 9th or 11th. Whoever wins the Penn State game, Penn State 9 if they win, USC 9 if they win.
Okay, I think we can go ahead and go go Penn State right here.
Okay.
By the way, Penn State, man, if Penn State gets it together, Brent, and if their passing attack can come around, like, gosh, dog, man, that two-headed monster at running back, Warren at QB now with the short yardage and goal line, like, I love Penn State, man. I think they could be really, really good. All right, what do we got next?
We'll go 7-10 then.
All right, who you got? Who you got for 7?
By the way, I really don't like this that you put all this on me. But
this is we. I don't want to be just me. It's boring doing just me.
Alabama at this point.
Okay. You wouldn't have.
I actually had Alabama 1 when I wrote mine down. So we'll.
I had Bama 5 after Texas 1.
Okay. Well,
but you then, went okay. The Big 10. So I like this. We're doing this together. That makes it more fun, anyways. All right. So you have Bama. We have Bama at 7, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you ready to put your Clemson Tigers in there now?
I think they get in. If they are 11-1 in the ACC championship game, I think they're in, yes.
And I do think they can beat Miami, but if they beat Miami in the championship game, they would already have a bye, remember. So that would be, you know, yeah. I've already given Miami the win at that. So
that's kind of the 3-10 split there almost, you know, like the bowling term.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the world they live in, honestly.
Yeah, it's one or the other. Yeah, I mean, it's – And this is where it's going to be fascinating to me, because we've never seen this before. And if we've never seen it, it's hard to say what they're going to do, what they're going to see, what they think is good. So where are we at next? What are we going to look at next?
8-9. Last two.
USC. I had Georgia at 7. So let's go Georgia here. I think Georgia. So
that's no Ole Miss, no Missouri, no Notre Dame in your
set
of current type high-ranked teams.
I do like that we kind of piece this together with both of our opinions, because, like, I don't have as much faith in Clemson as you do. I think they're really, really good, but I don't have as much faith in them getting to this point.
Well, my faith is mainly in the playoff committee putting another ACC team in, especially if they're 11-1 in the championship game.
Yeah. So here's teams I think to consider too. So I think Notre Dame's going to be very, very interesting, and they'll play a part in this, you know, playing at USC late. The service academies, Army and Navy, I'm not as worried about it. Iowa State obviously can win the Big 12 outright. And if they win the Big 12, they're going to be in. I think the thing that's going to get screwy is I think there's going to be two Big 12 teams in the mix. I think there's going to be two big ACC teams in the mix. And if the ACC and the Big 12 get 4, Brent, I think things are going to get weird, because you're guaranteed, obviously, already to have a non-group of Power 4. So that's already in the mix. So now you'd have 5 spots on 2 conferences, and the best 2 leagues are going to have to duke it out for the rest of the spots. and it's going to be freaking, it's going to be pandemonium. It's going to be crazy. I think there'll be just as many people pissed off as there was when there was four.
I agree. The ultimate monkey wrench to me is if you get a 9-3 Georgia.
Yeah.
Who, and by the way, loses road games very close, or loses to Tennessee at home really close and beats Ole Miss on the road, loses at Texas really close, like that, you know, they're one of the probably five or six best teams, but just didn't get the victories. That could be, that to me is the ultimate monkey wrench for this.
Well, and here's the thing. That's why I think it's so important that when they played last week against Bama, they came back. Like, you needed that. You could not have a, remember that game was 28-0 like that. And if it ended up 45-14, like that's a huge black eye that could become a big anchor. But yeah, again, name me a team anywhere in college football that's going on the road against three of the top 10 teams in the country and going to go undefeated. It's not going to happen. Like, I just don't, I don't see it happening, but this is fun. Missouri fans probably are going to be upset. I'll be interested to see how they handle Missouri with their schedule. If Missouri doesn't beat A&M, I think it's going to get, it's going to get harder for them anyways. But Boise to me is the one. UNLV right now looks the part because they're undefeated, but Boise losing to Oregon close, Brent, I think that's a feather. I think that's a feather right here in the cap when you watch Oregon, because I think they're going to be in the playoff mix and they're going to be able to go, we went on the road at their spot and we fought them. We fought them, you know, play for play, blow for blow. Good bracket. We'll do it again. We'll do it again. We'll get some insights and get some huge guesses. It's fun.
Probably get some people commenting about how bad it is.
Oh, it's absolutely atrocious. It's horrible, I'm sure. But listen, we're going to be here every week, guys. We're going to recap on Saturday night and give you all the immediate reactions to college football. If you like us, man, hit that subscribe button, please. If you don't, it's all good. No hard feelings. And we will see you next week.